This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment, we're going to be talking about estate planning for small estates. That's how we're going to start. My guest is Catherine Ray Wong, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. She's a former member of the Executive Committee of or Board of Directors of the San Mateo County Bar Association, still a member, of course, and her offices are in San Carlos. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies 11 fields of law. The other funder of this program is the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Kitty, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Chuck.
Very nice to have you back here. All right, so we're going to focus initially on the small estate. What is the small estate?
Well, a small estate under California law is assets that are in a person's name alone when they die that don't exceed $150,000.
And that's it.
And that's it. Now, remember that when we're dealing with these types of estates, that means that there's not a joint tenant or another person's name on the asset where it can pass to them by another operation of law theory, that it's not asset that's passing to a spouse or a registered domestic partner, that it's not an asset that's titled in the name of a person's revocable trust, that it may have a pay-on-death beneficiary, or it can be a Totten Trust account, which is a bank account that basically has a beneficiary named on it.
So that would not be included in the estate planning for the small estate?
It would not.
It would not. Okay. So if you had some things like this, but you had other assets that were only in your name only and worth $150,000 or less, you could still do the procedures that are available for the small estate, or could you?
Yes, you can do the procedure that in the small estate. Under the 13,000s of the California Probate Code, there are a couple of procedures available to be able to settle title to these assets mm-hmm. to the persons who are entitled to collect them. Mm-hmm. And it's generally a pretty straightforward procedure, but it has to be done correctly in order to be able to collect those assets. But when you do that, you're going to collect them subject to the debts that the decedent owed. So you still have to pay off the bills of that person. And we want to be able to guide people through this procedure if there's really not any quarrels among family members.
Well, that's, yeah, because that comes up with some frequency, I think.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it? You know, one of the things that I'd like the listeners to know, that the State Bar still has the statutory will, and statutory will with trust, does it not?
A statutory will under the California Probate Code is a form that's available, and the language is set out directly in the code, and there are some resources to be able to get that. You can probably go to the California Bar's website mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. be able to get the connection to be able to get that form and download it.
Let me give you, by the way, the website for the State Bar, in case you're interested in looking into the pamphlets that are free from the State Bar, www.calbar.ca.gov. And because Kitty is a certified specialist, what I'd like you to know, and those of you who've been listening to this program for a while, I'm sure are familiar with the terminology certified specialist, but Kitty, briefly, what did you have to do to become a certified specialist? And why is it important?
Well, it is important. I think in trust and estates law, there are about 1,000 of us in the state of California that are certified as specialists.
In the 11 fields?
Yeah, in estate planning.
Oh, in estate planning only?
What we call trust and estates law.
Oh, that's good.
So with 1,000 of us in the state, there certainly could be a lot more. But generally, we have to tell the California State Bar on our application for certification as a specialist that we have more than 5 years of experience in our area of law, that we spend more than 75% or more of our time practicing in this area of law, and then we have to sit for a one-day additional bar exam in order to demonstrate to the California State Bar Board of Specialization that we're competent.
Mm-hmm. What do you, in terms of, I know that in dealing with the small estate that you set us up or described for us, that this is something that people can actually do themselves, that is, the heirs can do themselves. What, however, do you recommend in terms of people being, let's say, properly preparing themselves for something like this?
I always tell people that if they're going to work with an estate planning attorney, or if they want to plan their estate themselves, that they can do some groundwork in order to educate themselves. At a minimum, in the state of California, we know that approximately half of the population don't even have a will. Mm-hmm. So that's where we start. We can either fill out the statutory form will and get that form available so that someone can fill it out and sign it before two witnesses, or everyone can handwrite their own will. A holographic will is valid in the state of California.
And it has to be completely handwritten.
Has to be completely handwritten. And I always tell people, write the word will at the top of the page. Write out exactly what it is that you want, and then sign and date it at the bottom.
And so you don't have to have it witnessed, right?
You do not have to have it witnessed, and certainly we do not notarize wills in the state of California. That's kind of a common myth that people think that we notarize wills here, but we don't.
All right, so you need to have a will. What are the other basic things that you feel, whether it's a small estate or not, that somebody should have?
Well, a will works at death. So what do we do if we're incapacitated during our lifetime? One of the very important documents that we all should have is a health care directive. That names an agent or somebody that we know and trust to be able to make health care decisions for us. Sometimes people call this the pull the plug document. But really, they can make any number of medical decisions for us or other health decisions for us if we can't communicate with our doctors. We can also have these forms available so that they're effective right now. So even though I can communicate with my doctors, I also want my agent to be able to communicate with my healthcare providers as well. So the healthcare directive, that is a form that is often available very easily from a hospital, from your HMO, from the senior center, from other websites available so that people can download it, fill it out very easily, and it is common to sign it before a notary.
And that is what I recall, that it usually you need to have it notarized. Is that correct?
Typically.
Yeah, okay. All right. What else? What other documents do you feel are absolutely necessary for somebody?
One of the basics that we do find very commonly useful, and I find it helpful within my own family, is a financial power of attorney. There's a uniform statutory.
That's a separate document.
It is a separate document used for the business purposes of assisting someone with their life, a number of different items. So if I wanted somebody to be able to sell my car or deal with my retirement benefits, sign my tax returns, these kinds of things can be authorized by this statutory form power of attorney, which can be very useful to have in the event that someone is unavailable to do something, or in the event of incapacity. If someone is incapacitated, we call it a durable power of attorney. But the form, uniform statutory form power of attorney, has the availability to make it only work if we become incapacitated, or it can also be effective the minute we sign it.
Really? That's very interesting. Usually I presume that this is something that husband and wife have between each other.
Very typically, if they like each other and trust each other.
If they trust each other, okay.
That's a big... domestic partners
as
well.
That's important. Yes. All right, so where are the difficulties that people face in the small estate? Where are they dropping the ball, if they are?
If perhaps someone has... failed to complete a beneficiary designation and they die, it's so easy on a bank account to not necessarily have something in your name alone. You can just name a beneficiary. We call that a Totten Trust account. So all banks have the availability, and the credit unions, mm-hmm. too, have the availability of naming a beneficiary on that account.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no necessity to go through any kind of probate procedure with the structure of financial institutions and the way that they serve their customers these days.
If you have, for example, a checking account, where a husband and wife have a checking account in both of their names, and one of them dies, does not that checking account automatically stay with the surviving spouse or not?
Typically it does.
Okay.
And also anything going to a surviving spouse under California law is not required to go through a probate
mm-hmm.
procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we find it desirable to get a court order, but those summary procedures for spouses are not technically probates, although they are heard and granted by the probate court.
If a husband and wife own a piece of real property, their home, for example, and it's in both their names, and it's presumed to be community property. If one spouse dies, does that go outside of probate?
Generally, yes. Mm-hmm. If the asset is to go to the surviving spouse, if there's a will that says it goes to the surviving spouse, or in California, we also have the availability to hold the deed as community property with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
So then we know that it's going to the surviving spouse on death.
Mm-hmm.
And an affidavit with a certified copy of the death certificate can be recorded against the real property to clear the title into the surviving spouse's name. But not everybody leaves their community property share to their spouse. You have the right under California law to leave your share of the community mm-hmm. property to whomever you want.
And you would have to have, I presume, a will or a trust or something that would designate that, would you not?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to have that.
What's the point of a living trust?
The living trust is a contract that you do with yourself during life. That's why we call it a living trust. But because it's living and breathing, we need to feed it. So when a person sets up a trust, we put assets titled in a trustee's name. I have my own trust, so I have my assets that are subject to my trust in my name as trustee.
Mm-hmm.
If I die, my trust is basically a will replacement. I name a successor trustee. That successor trustee succeeds to the office. They take a copy of the trust with my death certificate to the bank. They record an affidavit against the real property, and the assets go into the successor trustee's name. Successor trustee then follows my directions when I die,
mm-hmm.
and it says perhaps there's a trust for my children.
What if you own a home, and let's say we're talking about not just a small estate, but any estate where someone owns a home, and let's say it's not underwater, so that there's some value to it. What is the significance and the importance of having that home in a living trust? Is there something important about that?
Very significant. If we own a piece of real property in our name as trustee of our trust, then the trustee is going to be able to take title. If one trustee can't act, well, the next trustee comes along and they record a document with the recorder's office where the real property is located on who is the acting trustee. And if I am the trustee and I die and it's my real property, then I know the property is in my name.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next trustee can come along and follow my instructions, which might say that it goes to my two children.
Mm-hmm.
That trustee then has the right and duty to deed it to my two children. Of course, subject to my creditors, all of those mm-hmm. kinds of things. But when,
so the banks will still supposedly be paid
the
off.
Banks
we can't get away from that.
No, we can't.
Too bad.
No. We have to pay.
No way out, huh?
No, we have to
even
pay
upon
our
death,
debts.
We can't get out from under.
No, we still have to pay what we owe.
Okay, all right, but if you don't have your home in a living trust, and let's say it is in community property. Both names are on the title, and let's say, I think the presumption today, unless it says joint tenancy, I think the presumption today is if a husband and wife are named on the deed, that that's community property.
And also for registered domestic partners.
And for registered domestic partners. So let's say you don't have a living trust. What's the potential problem there?
So the potential problem is to determine who is to inherit the dead person's share.
All right.
And so either a will, or if there is no will, the community property will pass to the spouse.
To the surviving spouse.
That's right. But if the title is held in now the available community property with right of survivorship on the deed, which we have that available in California, then the surviving spouse can record a very simple affidavit with the death certificate and it's automatically into their name.
So I think what you're telling us, or not think, you are telling us that there are a number of things that people can do if they do some basic looking into this that they can do for themselves without the help of an attorney.
That's absolutely correct.
Do you believe, however, that it is wise for someone, even if they have a small estate, to seriously consider at least having some appointment with an estate planning attorney to try to get some, try to learn something from an experienced person as to those things that they don't want to miss, or do you feel that that's just being too careful?
Guidance can be very helpful. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as a licensed attorney doing estate planning, I find that it is advisable for people to seek the advice of lawyers. But if somebody is a good researcher, they can go to the law library, they can look up some very good materials on how to do this themselves, or to prepare themselves when they do go to the attorney to get some advice.
What I want to ask you, that there's a couple of things. I know that there's a petition. If you have real property worth not more than $150,000, and to contrast that with if you own real property that doesn't, with a value of not more than $50,000. Can you explain how that works and the relationship to your doing this if you have other assets besides the real property?
Yes, the petition to determine succession to real property is actually a petition that we have to have the court have a hearing on, and that is when the gross value of the real property and the personal property all together in California does not exceed $150,000.
Now, when you say gross, that real property could have, could have a mortgage on it of $100,000 or more.
That's right.
But it's the gross value of the property that you're talking about.
It's the gross value of the property that we're talking about.
All right.
And this is an increase, a significant increase in the value under the law. It was for a very long time $100,000. And even before that, it was $60,000. Mm-hmm. So this year, as of the beginning of January 1, 2012, now the value is $150,000. The petition and the notice of hearing are filed with the court. It's set for a hearing. The filing fee is not insignificant. It's $395. And then you have to have the court hearing, serve the copy of the petition on everyone who's entitled to it. And then the court will hopefully issue an order if everything goes straightforward, which can be recorded against the real property to clear the title into the people's names who are entitled to it. The $50,000 limit that we have now for the real property affidavit procedure in California is for real property not exceeding the value of $50,000. And that's under California Probate Code 13200. That is, again, another significant increase in value of property up from $20,000 and effective, again, January 1. 2012 this year. And the affidavit procedure is where the claimant, the person who's entitled to succeed to the real property, will file this affidavit with the clerk's office with all of the appropriate attachments for the modest filing fee.
The clerk of the Superior Court.
The clerk of the Superior Court.
In the county in which you are. Okay.
In the probate department.
Yeah.
And the filing fee is much more modest. It's $30. The clerk then can issue a certified copy of this affidavit for recording with the recorder's office to clear the title to the real property into the name of the person or persons who are entitled to it pursuant to the affidavit. So it does not require a hearing. It doesn't have to go before the judge, and it's a much more modest procedure.
I'm a great believer in the NOLO books, the large paperback books. This program that I've been doing now for 28 years, in the very, very early years, actually, the fellow who founded NOLO Press was on the program, and other people have been on the program. What's your thought? I know there's something like, I think, at least three of the NOLO books on some aspect of estate planning, wills or trusts or whatever. What's your basic thought about those books?
Yeah, they have a very good probate book as well. NOLO Press, even when I was a research attorney for our San Mateo County Superior Court in the probate department, I constantly referred people to utilizing NOLO Press books as a good resource. It has an excellent, basically a line-by-line instruction on how to complete these procedures. And also, even if a person decides that they can't do it themselves, that they want the help of a lawyer, there are excellent educational tools to prepare on what the lawyer will need in order to complete the procedure for the client.
By the way, I want to give you, in case you're interested in seeking, pardon me, I don't know, I've got a little frog in my throat today. I don't know why. I want to give you the Board of Legal Specialization statewide phone number as well as the website so that you can, perhaps if you're looking for a certified specialist, whether it's estate planning or maybe one of the in one of the other 10 other specialties, it's the statewide number 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. And the website is www.californiaspecialist. That's one word, no spaces, www.californiaspecialist.org. And what you'll find, whether you call the phone number or you go to the website, you'll find out who the certified specialists are in your particular area of California. And if you're in San Mateo County, my suggestion is that you contact the San Mateo County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service. And that number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Let's do this. By the way, I do want to let you know, if you've tuned in just a little bit late in the program, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program focusing, at least initially, on estate planning for small estates. My guest is Catherine Ray Wong. She's a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. She's a former actually member of the Board of Directors of the San Mateo County Bar Association. She's still a member, and her offices are in San Carlos. For those of you who listen to the program live, we will continue in the Bay Area for an additional half hour. We will also be on the Internet for an additional half hour, and I will give you a phone number in just a few minutes if you have some questions, comments, or whatever. So I hope you will join us if you are listening to us live. In light of the fact that we have just a few more minutes of the statewide version, Kitty, of this program, which is half an hour, which we do send out, by the way, for all of you to know, we do send this out to a number of stations in California, the first half hour, which they play the following week. What other things do you want to have the listeners know about in the remaining maybe 5 minutes of the program?
One of the things that I was thinking of, Chuck, as we're sitting here talking, is that when we're guiding someone through the affidavit or declaration regarding the personal property, not exceeding $150,000. And one of the things that that does not include are vehicles, vessels, those items that are registered with the Department of Motor Vehicles, including mobile homes. So there is a small estate affidavit procedure that the DMV, California DMV, has their own form available so that title can be cleared to those assets. And in addition, the amounts that are due a person who passes away for serving in our own U.S. armed forces are also excluded from this $150,000 limit. And then the compensation that may be due a person who dies up to $15,000 can be collected from the employer outside of that $150,000 limit. But again, when we're taking a look at many of the things that we're looking at in our own personal lives, we might have life insurance, or we might have an employee benefit that includes a 401k or any other kind of retirement benefit. It's important for people to make sure that all of those contractual rights have properly completed beneficiary designation forms so that they do not get included in the assets that we're talking about for these procedures.
So life insurance, if you have properly designated a beneficiary or beneficiaries, will not be part of part of the $150,000.
That's right.
The same thing with the 401k.
Correct. And then those assets can be collected by the people who are named the beneficiaries quite easily by presenting a claim form, the certified copy of the death certificate, perhaps their identification to the holder of the asset.
What about a pension?
A pension oftentimes will have a beneficiary form on it. So if you want to leave your pension rights to your spouse or sometimes to children under a certain age, sometimes there is a stream of pension right that goes to our survivors when we die. Not always, though.
Anything else in the remaining 2 minutes?
I think that's
okay.
About it.
Here's a question that was brought into the studio. If a bank account has a POD, now that means payment on death.
That's correct.
Okay. Designé. Must this bank account go through probate, or can the bank account go automatically to the designated beneficiary?
Well, the designated beneficiary can collect that account by showing up at the bank with a certified copy of the person's death certificate, with that beneficiary's identification. The government-issued identification is typically required by the bank. And the bank may want one or two other things, but generally they can just go and collect that asset at the bank.
One or two other things, like what? What would they want?
They might want to have...
Besides money. What else would they want?
They might want to have a form filled out, or they might want to have a copy of a bank statement. They just want to make sure that they can verify that the person collecting it is the same person who is named the beneficiary. But it is really that easy.
I'll tell you, my assessment of this is, although there are forms available, there are books available where you can educate yourself if you're not a lawyer, I really feel it would be helpful for someone who hasn't done anything to get some legal advice.
Totally agree. There is a reason why we are certified specialists in this area of the law, because there is a lot to navigate when trying to figure out, you know, is there a beneficiary named on it, or is it in the person's name alone? What code section applies in this particular situation? It's a lot.
We sometimes just don't want to make a mistake.
We don't.
All right, it's 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney, and we're talking about estate planning. We've been focusing on small estates. If you have some questions, some comments, some concerns, some problems, maybe you want to leave a lot of money to KLW, who knows? Oh, sorry, folks. Didn't mean to rile you there. Why don't you join us with your question, comment, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you have a question, a comment, something that you'd like to bring up that is of concern to you, and probably if it's of concern to you, it'll probably be of concern to other persons who have a similar situation. By the way, I want to let you know that next week, if you are working on preparing your information for your tax return, or should be, and many of us should be, I think, at this point, we're going to do our annual Call a CPA night next week if you want to join us. That's March 21st. And on the program itself will be my guest, David Hellman, a certified specialist in taxation law and estate planning. But we will have a number of CPAs in the conference room here at the station who will be talking with you off the air on our 800 number, 800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. So I hope you take advantage of Call It CPA Night next week. And then the following week, we will do our usual Call a Lawyer Night. And we're going to have a topic of topic of employment law that evening. And we will have our Call a Lawyer lawyers to talk with you. Again, no obligation on your part whatsoever. This is all good faith on the part of all these people, and especially, frankly, the Call a CPA night, because this is getting to be a pretty hot season at this point in terms of taxes, as you may all know. Alex, welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, thanks, fine. Thank you.
Thank you for the privilege. I just have a question about, first of all, what is a small estate? I don't know the definition of a small estate. And then if I die and I want to leave my whatever I got, including a mortgage.
You want to leave a mortgage to your heirs, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
The small estate, I don't know how you define a small estate. If it's a house like $600,000, but you owe a bank maybe half of it or whatever, maybe $300,000.
Alex, stop right there, because that's a very good question, because a lot of people have homes that are worth several hundred thousand with substantial mortgages. Is that, first of all, his question is, what is a small estate? Is it a small estate with a house that has a value of $600,000?
Well, to answer your question, Alex, is that a small estate, according to California law, does not exceed $150,000, and the size of the
$150,000,
and the estate is determined by the total value of the decedent's assets on their date of death, and it does not include assets that are that have other people's names on with them and has a mechanism to pass to them. So typically, if you die and your house, your $600,000 house, is in your name alone, it will be a probate asset.
So you can't do a small estate planning on that one, Alex.
But you can if the house gross value is worth $150,000.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about a typical San Francisco home. Well, maybe not so typical, I don't know. But $600,000 in San Francisco is not much. But depending on your equity and stuff like that, if we talk about give or take $300,000, how would that apply to how, what I got to do, what paperwork, what forms for my family and stuff?
So typically, if you own a home, we would generally advise that the client consider strongly a revocable living trust.
A revocable living trust.
Yes.
I see.
You have not, I take it, Alex, you have not been to an attorney, right?
No.
And how old are you, may I ask?
67.
67. You sound pretty young and pretty vibrant. But let me do this.
Yes, sir.
You are in San Francisco?
Clear.
Did you hear when I gave the number for the Board of Legal Specialization?
Yeah, 538-2100.
2280.
Oh, 2280.
538-2280. I'm sorry, wait a minute. That's the State Bar. 538-2100.
That's what I got.
That's the Board of Legal Specialization. And then you can go to the website, www.californiaspecialist.org.
Uh-huh.
Also,
yes, sir.
And by the way, because the San Francisco Bar Association is one of the funders of this program, I want to give you another number. I don't want to overwhelm you with numbers, but I think this is important.
Yes.
The San Francisco Lawyer Referral Service number is 415-989-1616. And essentially, you can call the San Francisco Lawyer Referral Service. That's part of the Bar Association of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they'll set up an appointment for you with whether it's an estate planning attorney or whatever area of law you're interested in for half an hour.
Yeah.
It'll cost $35.
Yeah.
And the value of this is that for everybody, wherever you are in the state of California, every bar association has a lawyer referral service, and you can call your own, including San Mateo County, the number of which I gave before,
right,
and have a half an hour consultation. And some lawyer referral services for half an hour, $25. Most, I think, are at least $35.
Well, that's nothing.
But yeah, you know what you need to do, in my opinion, if your home, frankly, you believe is worth $600,000.
Yeah.
And you're concerned, you don't have a will?
No, I have nothing.
You got nothing?
Yeah.
You ain't got nothing?
Nothing.
Okay.
I feel sorry for my family.
Well, hey, you be careful crossing the street.
Yes.
The importance of doing your estate plan, Alex, too, is not just for you, not just for your children. It is also for you. If you become incapacitated and can't manage your affairs,
yes,
proper estate planning will protect you as well.
Okay.
Okay, you got to do this, Alex.
So I'm doing my research now, and thank you for the education that you've been giving over the years.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for calling. All right, I want to let other people are quiet tonight. What are we doing? We got some major movie on or something like this tonight? I wonder. It's 1-415-841-4134. And if you're listening to us live anywhere in the state on www.kalw.org, you can call that number, and I welcome you to do so, 1-415-841-4134. If you have any questions at all about estate planning, living trusts, wills, et cetera, small estates, as we've been talking, please make use of the fact that we have this very experienced attorney here, Catherine Ray Wong, a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, and also a member of the San Mateo County Bar Association, here to talk with you. So make use of it. Before we take our next call, let me mention a couple of things that may be of importance to some of you if you are facing a foreclosure of your property. The Office of the Supervisor, San Mateo County Supervisor Carol Groom, is sponsoring a foreclosure prevention fair, and you might want to jot this down if you are facing some difficulty. It's Saturday, March 31st, from 9 to noon. It'll be at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, which is in San Mateo. And I want to give you a phone number. It's actually also sponsored by Housing and Economic Rights Advocates, Community Legal Services in East Palo Alto, the Project Sentinel, and some other organizations. So let me give you a phone number in case you're interested. It is free, of course, and again, March 31st, 2012, from 9 to noon. And the number to call for more information is 510-271-8443, 510-271-8443. And the other thing I'd like to tell you about, if you are an employer and you are concerned about the Americans with Disabilities Act and complying with it, there will be a free seminar presented by some organizations actually on Thursday, March 29th, from 9 to 11 a.m. And the reason I mention this to you is that one of the people who will be speaking, Bassam Altwal, who is a certified access specialist, was a guest on my program last year when we were talking about the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. So that's Thursday, March 29th, 2012, from 9 to 11. That will be in Walnut Creek. I'll give you a couple of numbers for that in case you're interested. For your facility and employee issues, 925-556-4404, 925-556-4404. And Mr. Altwall's number, in case you prefer to call his office, is 415-310-3010, 415-310-3010. I'll mention these again in the next couple of weeks, but those are important, both free seminars, which may be very helpful to you. All right, let's see who we've got. Marie, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you very much. I have a A quick question. When I overheard about the pay at death about bank accounts, when you mentioned that earlier.
Go ahead.
So I have a trust, and the only thing in the trust is a piece of property with the clause that at my death, then all the other assets would be poured into the trust. It was an expression like that, like a pour over.
A pour over trust. But
The pour over term is used with the will that would have been signed on the same day as the trust.
Yes, there is a will.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
It's a pour. It's a term of art,
right.
And we estate planners call it a pour-over will.
Pour-over, exactly.
And it basically says that assets that are outside of your trust will get poured over or put into your trust if you die and they're not titled properly in the name of the trust.
And that would include everything, right? Bank accounts. I wouldn't have to go and do all those other forms with the banks and, you know, to have beneficiaries and all that kind of stuff, right?
That's correct. But if you die and those assets are in your name alone and they exceed $150,000, then now that will is going to have to be probated to put those assets over into the trust. And it kind of defeats the purpose of why you did the trust to begin with.
Okay. So if the assets that I have outside of the trust are more than $150,000, then it would go into probate. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Before they go into the trust?
That's correct. And so to avoid that, what you do is you take your non-retirement assets, generally those bank accounts, and put them into your name as trustee of your trust. Take the trust down to the bank with your bank account number and your identification and ask the banker to help you transfer those accounts into the trust, knowing, however, that a bank will close an account and open a new one. So if it's a checking account, you want to be aware of that. So it's a big hassle to close a checking account. Mm. Oftentimes my clients are instructed to keep just your operational checking account outside of the trust.
Okay.
But everything else should go into your name as trustee of your trust to be sure that it's utilized correctly. And more importantly, remember what I told Alex, is that if you become incapacitated, that's where the trust can be very helpful, so that your assets can be used for your support and your maintenance and for your family.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's anything left at death, your instructions will be followed in accordance with the trust.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much for clarifying that. I appreciate it.
Marie, thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Steve, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Are you there, Steve? Oh, he dropped out. All right, Steve dropped out. Who do we have next, Martin? Let's see who we've got. We've got Graham. Graham, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hi. Thank you.
Hi, Graham.
I have two very simple questions. The first one is, we have a trust and we also have a will, and I've never quite understood. If you have a will, why do you need a trust? And if you have a trust, why do you need a will? That's the first question. And then the second question is, for property that we have, you know, we live in California, which is a community property state, the titles on the property don't necessarily have both of our names, but does it really matter?
Mm.
Okay, so if you have a trust, your real property should be titled in your name as trustee of your trust. So whatever your instructions are, sometimes when I design a trust for clients, they might have separate property if they're married or they're registered domestic partners. So that which is maybe inherited, they might have in their name alone, but they might have it in their name as trustee of the trust as their separate property. The joint property will be in the clients' names together as trustees if it's community property. But you went and you asked a very important question. Why do we have a trust when we have a will? Why do we have a will when we have a trust? Well, we don't always have both. If you have a will, you don't always necessarily have a trust. And a will speaks at death, we learn in law school. So it only works when you die. A living trust works right away to handle things when you sign the trust and put the assets into the name of the trust. So the living trust deals with incapacity, and then ultimately passes things at death quite easily. When we have a living trust, we always have a will. And the will typically says, hey, if I leave something out of my trust, I want it put into or poured into my trust. Mm-hmm. So that your trust is the mechanism that has the testamentary provisions for what happens to your assets when you die. If you only have a will, you could actually have trust provisions within the will.
Mm-hmm.
That trust in the will have to be probated, and mm-hmm. that testamentary trust, or the trust that becomes created at death, has to be established by court order in the probate court, the Superior Court of the State of California.
And it is much more expensive, I take it, generally speaking, to probate a will than it is to have a living trust?
Typically it is. Mm-hmm. The California Probate Code has always provided, for the 32 years I've been in this mm-hmm. business, though mm-hmm. not all as a licensed attorney, mm-hmm. has always provided for a graduating fee schedule based on the gross value of the assets.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be quite expensive to get through the probate process in California, and time-consuming.
Yeah.
I'm very good at getting cases through the court, but they take, at a minimum, 9 months to a year.
Even on something not terribly complicated?
Yes, even
really?
On something not terribly complicated.
That's because of the volume of other cases in the court? Is that basically it?
Not only the volume of the cases of the court, but also because of the statutory time periods they have to pass in order to get that case through the court system.
All right. Okay. All right. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Catherine Ray Wong, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, a former member of the Board of Directors of the San Mateo County Bar Association, still, of course, a member. Her law offices are in San Carlos. And let's see, we have now Evelyn. Evelyn, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Hi.
And thank you for doing this. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
My question is for those of us who have a very small amount to pass on.
Well, how much you got?
Especially,
how much you got, Evelyn?
Well, I just have, say $100,000 cash and personal effects and a house that's way underwater.
Oh, that's too bad.
And wasn't worth too much. So
sorry to hear that.
Can I just pass on? The bank can have the house, but how can I keep my heirs from not having to get all entangled in a lot of stuff that they have neither time nor will reap profit?
This is that's a very interesting question you have. Your house is underwater, meaning that your mortgages exceed the current value, right?
Correct.
You're trying to make sure that the obligation on your house will not be inherited by your family or whoever your heirs are, in that you have other assets that are separate and apart from the house. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Small estate qualifies, as you have defined it, as a small estate, but it's something, and you do like to leave your kids.
You're a little worried that the bank will chase your heirs for the $100,000 you're saying you have?
Well, I wondered whether that's possible, or if I put it in a trust, whether that gets complicated. I think that also if I should, say, change over and redo things, say, have a... there are all kinds of new things out there that my parents and I never dreamed of.
Let me mention something, because you obviously have... This is a very good question, and there's some subparts to it, and because the State Bar does not permit my guests to give specific legal advice on the air, please understand that. But as you may know, if you listen to this program, I ask my guests to more generally respond to the question to try to give you some direction, okay?
Thank you so
All right,
much.
Very good. So, Kitty, you're on.
Let's take the example of the bank account. If how can the person who's entitled to inherit collect the bank account when there's a piece of real property? Also, and again, we don't really take a look at the debts. We take a look at the gross value of the estate. The affidavit procedure under the California Probate Code 13100, when you declare under that affidavit that the estate doesn't exceed $150,000, you're still talking about the gross value of the assets of the decedent, including the real property.
Mm-hmm.
So
even
though it's underwater, it's mm-hmm. the gross value.
Yes.
So we don't really care the debts that someone owes.
Right.
So I don't think that the summary procedures would be available.
Would work here. What's the situation, though, assuming the summary procedures don't work here? What's the situation, though, of her heirs being able to inherit the $100,000 without being subject to the obligation of the mortgage on the home?
Well, I don't think in this particular situation that it would... that there's an easy answer.
Really? Okay.
It can be quite of a convoluted situation to analyze, mm-hmm. but generally speaking, those bank accounts are probably going to be subject to the debts of the decedent. Although we have had situations where we've gone through probates, where we've gone in and allowed the property to be short sale,
mm-hmm.
or we've allowed the property to be foreclosed upon,
mm-hmm.
and it just depends on whether or not the bank is willing to walk away from mm-hmm. the other assets in the estate, because they are owed the money by the decedent. If the debt exceeds the value of the property,
yeah.
the person still borrowed it from the bank.
So you are saying, if I understand you correctly, if Evelyn has $100,000 in a bank that she wants to leave to her heirs, but she has this property that's underwater, even though the mortgage on the property or mortgages on the property may be some other bank other than where she has her cash, the heirs may still have a problem being faced with the obligation remaining on the property?
If the assets remain in her name alone, if there is a retirement account, for mm-hmm. instance, she can name a beneficiary on that. Those are not going to be subject
okay.
to the
All
claims
right.
of her creditors.
All right.
So there are some things that can be planned around. But again, in this particular situation, it really should take the evaluation of a one-on-one situation with a qualified attorney giving her the right advice.
Where are you located, Evelyn?
Alameda County.
Alameda. You know, my thought would be, did you get the phone number for the Board of Legal Specialization?
Yes, I took that.
Okay, good. And you also got the website?
Yes.
Okay. I think that would be good for you. You have not gotten any advice from a lawyer on this?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I think if I may suggest, and certainly this is what Kitty just suggested, I think it may be worth it for you to at least get an initial consultation.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I already have new information. I thought that the cash, that the bank couldn't go beyond the value of the, you know, beyond taking the house. So this is new information.
I think you need to look into that. So very good. Good luck to you.
Thanks so much.
Here's a question that was brought into the studio. Is it better to put your IRAs into a living trust or to keep them apart from a living trust?
Well, IRAs, I-R-A, what does that stand for? Individual retirement account. So by law, the individual retirement accounts are required to be in a person's name. We call that person the participant, the one who funds the IRA. So it must be in my name alone if I'm the owner of the IRA, but I have a properly completed beneficiary designation
mm-hmm.
form on file with the company.
Mm-hmm.
I have little children. My little children cannot by law own property or assets. And so if I die and they inherit it, I do have it steered to a trust for their benefit. But there are very severe tax consequences for IRAs to go to beneficiaries. So you want to make sure that you get the right advice before you just name beneficiaries
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
a trust.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a spouse, typically the spouse is the primary beneficiary. The alternate beneficiary, if you have adult children and you like them and you can trust them and they can manage things, well, you name them the alternate
mm-hmm.
beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
So they're usually better handled outside of the trust realm because of the IRS regulations associated with
okay.
them.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Let's see. Who do we have now? Rachel, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi there.
So I have a question, a basic question with a subtext that's a little more specific.
Go ahead.
I recently bought a home with my wife, and we contacted an attorney. We don't at this moment have a will and trust or we don't have the documents in place, but we contacted an attorney about getting one set up because I feel strongly that it's necessary, but we were sort of stunned by the cost and we're not prepared for the cost of what the real cost of what it would take to get that in place with through an attorney. Mm-hmm. Someone suggested to us checking out an organization like California Document Preparers or some other similar kind of thing where it's they aren't attorneys. The costs are considerably lower, and they do sort of I kind of imagine it's stock documentation. So one, I wanted to know the benefits or not of those type of organizations, and also the subtext would be, is it more important because we're a same-sex married couple in California to go through an attorney directly rather than trying to save money by...
Okay, I think we understand. Stay with us, Rachel. Kitty, what do you have in mind?
First of all, I have to apologize for the cost of the legal profession. Our overhead is just tremendous. It's not uncommon for lawyers to charge anywhere between $250 to $500 an hour or several thousand dollars to set up an estate plan. Mm-hmm. However, I do tell people, when you go through life and you buy a house and you have a bank account and you have a retirement account, you've spent your life gathering these assets. Your family is a good investment to be able to be sure that these assets are protected to be able to handle them if you're incapacitated or if you die. Document preparation services do provide a valuable legal service, a document service, because they can't practice law in California. And I've seen document preparation services do fine estate plans, and they've worked mm-hmm. for the clients. Mm-hmm. I've helped clients settle the affairs, or I've reviewed them and made changes to them when they decided that they wanted to come to a lawyer. But that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on how simple the project is, how closely you adhere to their instructions that they give you in completing the project or the form. Just because a couple is together, it doesn't matter if they're opposite or same sex. You have legal rights, and to be able to be sure that the estate planning is done well.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen couples do their own estate plan mm-hmm. utilizing tools such as Nolo Press.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a myriad of ways of accomplishing your estate plan. It's just important to make sure that you cross all the T's and dot all the I's.
You know, one of the suggestions I have, Rachel, on this, since obviously it is very expensive to have an attorney do all of this, my suggestion is maybe you want to take a look at some of the Nolo Press books to educate yourself in that area. And you don't even have to buy them, although I think that's a very fine investment at just any bookstore. Or you can get them in your local public library in the consumer section and look at them there or check them out. I do think, though, if you are going to do some forms through a document preparation service, that I think it would be worth it for you to take the documents and figure that it's worth it for you to pay, and I'm just throwing this out, shooting from the hip here, at least a couple of hours for a good, experienced attorney to look them over and make sure that they're okay. That's my suggestion, for what it's worth. Kitty, how do you feel about that?
Well, I've found attorneys that won't review
they will
document
not do that.
Preparation
they
services.
They feel that this is a little bit too much to do. Well, okay.
I spoke to an attorney that told me that he felt it wasn't, he would spend the same amount of time reviewing as he would to create them.
That's very interesting.
Yes.
That's very interesting. Well, okay. Well, thank you for correcting me on that. I think that that's worth it. Well, good luck to you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care. You know, unfortunately, we have come to the end of the program, and I know there are some of you who still wanted to talk with Kitty, but unfortunately, we've come to the end of the program. We will do Call a Lawyer Night at the end of the month. That's going to be March 28th. I'm not sure if we're going to have an estate planning attorney then or not, but you might check with us. That number is 1-800-525-9917. Kitty, I want to thank you very much for coming back to the program.
Thank you, Chuck,
having
me.
We just didn't have enough time to do everything, unfortunately.
It's always a joy to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Catherine Ray Wong is a specialist in estate planning certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. She's a former board of director member of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Her offices are in San Carlos. Funding for your legal rights has been made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding has been provided by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. By the way, next week, if you're working on your tax return for 2011, or should be, we're going to do our Call a CPA night, which we do yearly. My guest on the program will be David Hellman, a certified specialist in taxation law and a certified a CPA. So there you are. If you want to have some tax questions, try to get some answers and do some planning, that's next week. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.
.7 KALW San Francisco.